This is the March to Redeem the Soul of America. Thank you everybody for being here. To our new friends today who have showed up, not my new friends, but my old friends, Michael Kinney and Happy Man with the drums. Don't y'all like the sound of that, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh man. Reverend Diane Baker, who will offer a prayer for this event tonight. Come on, Diane.
Actually, I'm going to offer a prayer that Bill McElvaney wrote, Reverend Bill McElvaney. God of peace, we pray for an end to U.S. occupation in Iraq, an end to more deaths of Americans and Iraqis. Stir the hearts and minds of our representatives in the direction of peace. Empower us to be faithful to our calling as peacemakers. God of barrier breaking, community making, we pray that our nation and world find security and community through international cooperation rather than through misguided, preemptive violence and daily killing fields. God of reconciliation, we give thanks for peacemakers who have exemplified nonviolent solutions and courageous initiatives for peace with justice. Mohandas Gandhi, Rosa Parks, Anwar Sadat, Martin Luther King, Oscar Romero, Abraham Heschel, and countless others unnamed and unrecognized. God of justice, you have mandated nations to not lift up sword against nation, nor to learn war anymore. We pray that our nation will turn our weapons into health care, our missiles into bread for the world. These prayers and thoughts we offer in your holy name and for the sake of all those who have lost loved ones in war, for the millions of people hungering for the necessities of life, for a future without violence, and for a sane culture of peace. Amen. I know that most of you are tired, and several of us have marched, and we're hungry and want to go home. But I'd like to share just a couple of thoughts. So I'm going to do that, and when you're tired of me talking, raise your hand or beat a drum. And that'll be good.
You go, sister.
Thanks, Jim. We're marching today because of war. And 3 days ago, I had a dream. I had a dream because my grandfather was a veteran and died in a VA hospital. My father was a veteran and died in this very VA hospital. My brother was a veteran and died in a VA hospital. I had a dream that there is peace and healing. And this is a place where we have come. And so I'd like to share just a few words with you. We're standing in front of a building dedicated to healing. We're standing in front of the Veterans Hospital, in part because this hospital is a reminder of some of the real costs of war that the administration worked so hard to make sure we don't count in care of the Veterans Hospitals. Although we're prevented from seeing the returning caskets, the administration will grudgingly admit the number of U.S. soldiers who are killed in Iraq and Afghanistan. By now, you're all aware that the bounty body counts given by the administration don't include those who die after they are lifted off the ground or en route, or who die from their wounds the next day. And the figures don't include the 35 to 37,000 Iraqi civilians, women and children, whom we casually label and then dismiss as collateral damage. Nor do the figures include the soldiers who are being maimed at the rate of more than 16 per day, and who return to lives that are forever changed by the physical and emotional damage done to them. And many of them are here in front of us. This hospital is a reminder of the great contrast in our society. Inside this place are veterans who have made great sacrifices for their country. Here are doctors, nurses, and other staff who have devoted their lives to service and sacrifice. I challenge you to search the records for any evidence of any sacrifice whatsoever by our president. This hospital is about success. It is clearly successful in its mission to save lives and alleviate pain. I challenge you to find a single point in the career of our president where anything he touched was successful. This hospital represents devotion, devotion to others, devotion to healing and to research and to rehabilitation and long-term care to those patients inside and to children growing and to love. Yay! Let me end by saying these words. I love you. We march so that we can continue to challenge the reason why so many lives are being changed and for what reason. We march to challenge the lifestyles we have grown accustomed to that support our days of greed and wealth rather than supporting our troops. We march to challenge the administration that has lied to us and prevents us from bringing our troops home now. May God give rest to the souls of my grandfather, my father, and my brother. I love them all, and all of those to whom the VA hospitals have provided comfort, and I love you. And may we give up some comfort so that this hospital will have less to do in the future.
Precious. Okay. All right. Can we give a round of applause for Diane Baker, please? Diane has a life work of dedication to issues of peace and justice. I love you, Diane. Our next speaker is an academic, a teacher. He's been an activist for at least 3 decades that I know of. He's a teacher in the DISD. May I introduce John Fullenweider. John?
Well, good afternoon to all of y'all who've been walking in the sun. More power to you. I'm glad to be able to just share a few words with you about the cost of the war in Iraq and about the cost of the war to things we could have been doing here at home. Sometimes you get a little window on the war in an unexpected way. I'm going to have to look at notes to do this. But some of y'all may have seen this. About 2 weeks ago, I saw a little AP report that said, firm failed to protect U.S. troops' water. Some of y'all may have seen this, but somehow an internal report emerged from the bowels of Halliburton, which you know is the vice president's former company, and it's probably the biggest contractor we have in Iraq, their subsidiary, Kellogg Brown & Root. Report stated that in May 2005, the firm's water treatment manager warned that American troops and civilians were left vulnerable to, quote, mass sickness and death, unquote, because KBR hadn't properly treated the sewage and the bathing water used by the troops. A little-known hero, the guy that found this contamination, was a man named Ben Carter. Found it in a commode in the Ramadi base. He resigned just shortly after he found this because the company officials kept telling him he'd be fired if he tried to publicize his findings on the larvae and stuff in the water. The only way it came out was when he threatened to sue the company for his own illness, potential illness, from being exposed to this water. And it's been that way since the first days of the occupation. After Paul Bremer closed up shop in June of 2004, only then were auditors allowed in to see how the CPA had spent over $20 billion in Iraqi money. Now, y'all are all activists. You're familiar with that Congress appropriated about $18 billion to rebuild Iraq. But most of that money wasn't spent by Bremer. What Bremer was spending was oil money from the sale of Iraqi oil. And he began with about $6 billion that had been left over from the oil for food program. And then there was about $10 billion in frozen assets around the world from the Saddam regime. And then he added to that the money that came in from the sales of Iraqi oil. And when the first team of auditors went in there in July of 2004, they found that about $20 billion had been spent. The first thing they found, though, was that about almost $9 billion of that money could not be accounted for in any way. This was the entire budget of the Iraqi interim government from October of 2003 to June of 2004. And there was no way to account for any of it. When they got into the money that could partially be accounted for, they found examples like this. Some of these are funny, but they're really not. There were 3 million meals that Kellogg Brown & Root charged the government $88 million for that were never served and never found. When this was reported out, Halliburton basically stonewalled. They said, we've got our own internal audit team working on that. The teams were called Tiger Teams. And they were parked in Kuwait City in a Grand Kempinski Hotel. And in the course of their audit, they ran up another $1 million for their hotel rooms and expenses. And they promptly passed that through also. They had a contract to carry supplies from one U.S. base to another. Of course, the convoys had to be guarded by the U.S. military, but that didn't matter. It was a private company, Kellogg Brown and Root, that moved the material. And what they did was they didn't use military trucks. They bought brand new Mercedes-Benz trucks at a cost of $89,500 each. But they didn't buy like extra oil filters or adjust them for desert climate. So when they would stop, rather than stop to repair, you know, because they might be attacked by the insurgents, they just set them on fire and leave them. And there were hundreds of these trucks that where this was done. The drivers of the trucks would be making $8,000 to $10,000 a month. The soldiers that were guarding them were making $2,000 to $3,000 a month. And so you can see that the ripoff involved in the war involved is just really widespread. The first international team that went in there to monitor was a United Nations group that was called the International Monitoring and Accounting Board. They were supposed to look at the Iraqi oil exports. And their first thing that they found was that they weren't metering the exports. They had no idea how much had actually been pumped. The government claimed the official CPA estimate was that in the first year of the occupation, about $10 billion in Iraqi oil had been sold. But many private groups put the figure at about 40% more than that, another $4 to $5 billion in money that was then an off-the-books sort of slush fund that could be used by CPA and by the interim Iraqi government. And it went on this way throughout. And you can bet that it's continuing today. The cost of the war then, of course, is first and foremost the lives lost. Which incidentally, the Iraqi lives lost, there's not a very good count on that. The Iraq body count, which some of y'all are familiar with for the peace group in UK, they estimate between 30 and 40,000 civilians. Bush has begun to say 30,000. There was a team of doctors that issued a report in the British medical journal called The Lancet in October of 2004, right before the election. Their estimate was 100,000 Iraqis had been killed between March 2003 and October of 2004. And then there was a report, I never saw it anywhere, but the New England Journal of Medicine. They were doing a survey of U.S. soldiers to try to anticipate mental health needs when they returned home. They asked the soldiers, have you seen a civilian shot or have you shot a civilian? And 30% of the ones they interviewed said that they had either seen or shot a civilian. Now, there's been over 130,000 troops in Iraq through the entire occupation. So if you think about 30% of that, that sort of supports the 30,000 figure. Anyway, when all is said and done, the cost is never going to be known. The best estimate that we have right now for rebuilding Iraq, I'm sorry to do all these facts and figures, but hey, they are interesting. The UN and the World Bank did a study shortly after the invasion and occupation. They estimated that it would take $56 billion to restore Iraq to the way it was before the invasion. And that wasn't a very good situation because it had been because of the decade of sanctions. The most we have committed is that $18 billion for reconstruction. Already $3 billion of that has been reprogrammed to security, which means to hiring security forces, private security firms like Blackwell International, to guard people like Paul Bremer or his successors. There's not really much chance that the U.S. is going to pay this bill. Regardless of the president's rhetoric, the thing is, of course, as you know, coming unglued. But the reluctance in Congress to put more money into redevelopment of Iraq is pretty clear also. The one thing that we could probably do to help the Iraqi people would be to make a commitment post-hostilities to rebuild the country. But even that decent effort, if we ever wanted to make it, if the country would make it, be brave enough to make it, depends on ending the occupation and ending the war. So even that sort of receded off into the not too distant future, we hope. But anyway, as you can see, there's a tremendous amount of fraud, there's a tremendous amount of ripoff going on beyond the obvious loss of life over there. And it's incumbent upon us to bring this up to public officials and so forth. All of these audits are public, by the way, and you can get them on the internet just by going to So just Google in audit in Iraq, most of them will come up. So thank you for your time, and again, carry on your great work. I hope you raise the conscience of the nation with the walk, and I hope you get a lot more publicity as you go. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Isn't he great? John Fullenwater, he's from Dallas. He's a teacher in this area and has been a friend to the peace and justice movement for a very, very long time. Our next speaker is Michael
McNeil.
He's going to be speaking on behalf of Code Pink in Fort Worth. Come on up, Michael.
Thank you. Thank you, Hadi. Most of y'all know me. My name is Mike McNeil. I'm a former United States Marine Corps Gulf War veteran. I served my country. My country called me up. I answered that call, unlike our so-called leaders, who are the real gutless cowards. And a majority of the people who support this war have never served a day in their life in the military, defending 230 years of democracy and freedom. And that's what I committed my life to, not to see it railroaded by neoconservatives, war profiteering. I have a couple announcements for Code Pink. I am a member of Code Pink. I believe in what they're doing. I believe in taking up I don't believe that women should be taking the lead on this, that the men must stand up too. And I'm still kind of wondering, I guess, where all the men are in our country. Right now, we're the main leaders in this peace movement. And it is our responsibility to set the standard, set the example for peace. This is a message from Code Pink. The VA hospital is considered one of the worst in the nation. We do not take care of our veterans as a society, and I think the reasons behind that is because we want to deny the reality of war. And so our media and government agencies do not care to know about the veterans that continue to fight their war in the hospitals, rehab centers, drug and alcohol treatment centers, suicide crisis centers, domestic violence centers, rape crisis centers, homeless shelters right here in this area. Our government and media deny the true number of casualties of war by not counting the suicides of our returning vets like Jeffrey Lucy, Doug Barber, and many others whose sacrifices are discarded along with the human face of collateral damage. The toxic effects of DU, rapes of our own military women by their fellow servicemen, and much more. I want to encourage people to go to CodePinkFortWorth.org for information on how to support our veterans. We will post a list of items that can be donated to the VA. We will have information on a benefit art show for a grassroots group of veterans working for PTSD. We have information on how you can help end the war, like going to DC for Mother's Day, which I'm going, I already have my ticket, heeding the original sentiment behind Mother's Day. Julia Ward Howe, who wrote the Battle Hymn of the Republic, said, "As men have often forsaken the plow and the anvil, at the summons of war, let women now leave all that may be left of home for a great and earnest day of counsel for peace." I have one more message. I don't know exactly where all this is leading. I don't know what our administration has in store for us. Judging by the patterns, the evidence, the design, the incompetence, when they tried to sell our ports on the East Coast to Dubai, to me that raised red flags that another 9/11 is in the works. I don't know. I only have premonitions. When I see the chemtrails above us, when I hear about 800 detention sites, I can only surmise, I can only think that another 9/11 is possibly in the works. For them to declare a police state and invoke executive orders. And I think the first people that they'll round up, perhaps, are the dissenters, which will be me and y'all. I can only say that if they do declare a police state, I'm not going to cooperate with it. I'm not cooperating with the Patriot Act, one or two. I'm not cooperating with this campaign of destruction and chaos. If they come knocking on my door, I will invoke the Declaration of Independence. And we will have a battle for this country right here in our front yard in America. And I vow to be in that battle. Thank you all very much. Coming out.
All right. I'd like to ask Nick Motrin to come up and speak to you all. Nick is with Consumers for Peace, and his organization is the one that issued the national call for March to Redeem the Soul of America. Nick is based in New York. Is that right, New York? And he's going all the way from ExxonMobil headquarters in Irving to Crawford, Texas. Please welcome Nick Motrin from Consumers for Peace.
Thank you, Hadi. I really find it a blessing to be here with everyone today. And we did walk about 2.5 miles, and I guess everybody's feet are a little bit tired, but I think that the spirit of this is so compelling and restorative that this walk is going to be a real strengthening experience. Now, I just wanted to mention two things. Number one is these people who are here, whose pictures are represented, are board of directors of ExxonMobil Corporation. And we felt that we should take them with us on this march down to Crawford, because otherwise they wouldn't see anything of what's going on really in this country. What we have is a situation where there's a smaller group of people who are totally isolated from the realities of folks who don't know how they can pay their rent, how they can buy their food, how they can pay for gasoline to go home and back and forth to work. So when it comes down to setting down gas prices and fixing gas prices with other companies, they don't have a problem with looking to what they think they'd like to have so that they can satisfy their home situation or get a new car or make sure their kids get to go to college and that they grow up without having to worry about physical matters. They live in a different world than we do, and that's why we brought them with us. Evidence of that is the $7 billion that they accumulated last year that they didn't really work for at all. It's just because this war created a situation in the oil marketplace that drove oil up above $60 a barrel. And you can see right now, this summer, we're going over $3 a gallon for gasoline real soon without any concern on their part as to what that means to the average person. So while we're on this march, we're saying that we want this $7 billion to be returned to society, specifically at the VA hospital. We've got a situation that's overwhelmed, not only because of Iraq and Iran, but because a lot of veterans are losing their pensions, they're losing their health care, they can't afford it. And so you have people who never thought they'd go to the VA going there now because that's their only basic health care. So Congress, 3 weeks ago, they had the opportunity to pass a $630 million appropriation for mental health, prosthetics, that means artificial limbs for people who had them blown off, and for catastrophic health care. And the Republicans killed that $630 million emergency appropriation. So one of the things we're going to do is say to ExxonMobil, out of this $7 billion, we want $630 million to restore what the Republicans left out. We're making up a list of other things that we want funded out of this $7 billion, so if you have ideas, let us know. But thank you very much for coming, and I was in the Navy myself, and I haven't had to use the VA system, but I live near a VA hospital in Montrose where they treat psychiatric problems, and there are men in there from the Korean War, from the Gulf War. All these people in this town that's next to it called Peekskill, they're not wanted in that town. They hate the fact that the VA hospital is next to them because they can't stand to see them in the street. They can't stand to think that they have drug problems. So they want in Peekskill to go to war. They're totally behind this war. The city council won't pass any resolutions against this war. They stand up and salute the flag at every single city council meeting. But when these men, and this, they all are men in this hospital, come into that town, they are treated really like, don't be here. And if we see you, we're really looking through you. And this is what's going on politically in this country. So I just feel like we need to, when we see people who have served, we need to go the extra mile with them, because it's a sure thing that most of society and most of the government are not going to do that. So thank you very much.
All right, thank you, Nick. Our next speaker is, does not need an introduction, but I want to say a couple of words about him. He's been a staff member of the SCLC, which is the only organization that Martin Luther King founded, for 40 years. He's a man committed to justice first. He's committed to justice, whether it's social justice, economic justice, issues of criminal justice. He's there. He's an inspiration to a lot of us. He's a student of Dr. Martin Luther King, an associate of that great man. And we are lucky and grateful to have him amongst us in this area to help us and lead us. Please welcome Peter Johnson.
Welcome to East Oak Cliff, one of the most dangerous and poorest areas in Dallas. There's a tremendous amount of homelessness in this area. There are a lot of boarded up buildings where homeless people spend the night. To be here in front of Veterans Hospital, I've got good news and bad news for you. The bad news is that protesters on this side of Lancaster Road cannot go across the street and pee in the bathrooms at the Veterans Hospital. They told us when we went across the street that no protesters are allowed in the hospital. Then they told me that the hospital is for veterans. I said, well, that's strange. I'm not a veteran. I've been going in and out of this hospital for years visiting veterans, and nobody never stopped me. And if you haven't visited veterans in a veterans hospital, you need to take a minute and do that. And you will see what warfare does to people. When Suzanne and I was walking across the street, there was a veteran at the red light with us, talking to himself in a heavy, heavy army jacket, the kind that you would wear in real cold weather. Now, you know, something has got to be mentally wrong with somebody who has that kind of heavy jacket on, hot as it is today. That is typical of what's happening to young people that's coming from Iraq. Now let me tell you what the good news is. Where's Nick? Nick, the good news is I got a call today from a white lady who owns a business in North Dallas, and she called and told me she saw us on television last night, and she cut her ExxonMobil card in half. So, and her name is Deborah Shelton. And you may think that we aren't doing any good, but that in itself is the evidence of what a few people can do. And if every day we can get one, and I told her she needs to mail it back, the ExxonMobil, with a note. And if we can get one person to do that every day of this march, we will send a message, not just to ExxonMobil, but to the nation. You know, I am literally overwhelmed at your commitment to peace. My friend John Fuller and I, we've been friends, I guess, almost 40 years now, John, 35 years. John used to be a part of a group called the Bodak Patriots, and they were fighting for the rights of poor black people 30-some years ago. He's a really interested and dedicated man. And I just have a tremendous amount of love and respect for you, John, for the work you've done over the last 30, 40 years in our communities. I thank Michael, this ex-Marine, is deeply passionate and committed to peace and have seen what warfare can do. And you know, God took Paul, who was a tax collector, and made him into a Christian because God said the greatest sin fighter is the person who has seen sin up front. So the greatest peace advocate is the person who's seen warfare through their own eyes. And I have a lot of respect, Micah, for what you've had to go through in life and to come back now and stand up for peace. Nick Moulton is 67 years old. I am 60-something, I don't know. But for Nick to want to come down here and walk for 125 miles because of the exploitation and environmental racism that this company ExxonMobil is perpetuating, I think he deserves all of our support. And what I want to say to you all is that all movements start with small groups. You know, I was a part of the great student movement in the 60s. And I know you remember the student movement against the wall as thousands and thousands of young people from colleges and universities throughout the nation coming to Washington. That's not how it started. We started going to Washington with 20 and 30 people here. And we would be very, very frustrated and disgusted because we'd work our tails off to get people to come to Washington. And we would raise all of this money and 50 people would show up. We would travel all over the nation to the colleges and universities, working with student governments and with students, and we gradually we began to build the anti-war movement. When the Selma to Montgomery movement started, it was only a handful of us, who wanted to walk from Selma to Montgomery. But by the time we got on the outskirts of Montgomery, we were 50,000 strong. And it was people from all over America. So do not be dismayed or frustrated. I call that song that blues in the ghetto. You hear that all day and all night, you know. Do not allow our small numbers to make you disappointed and frustrated. Be consistent, be persistent, and let's walk all the way to, as many of us can, to Crawford, Texas. And by the time we get to Crawford, we will have summoned the nation by using our feet. You know, I was on the march that went from Memphis, Tennessee to Jackson, Mississippi. You know, as soon as we got into Mississippi, there were only 18 of us. James Meredith got shot. And every day, hundreds of people joined that march as we marched toward Jackson, Mississippi. I was on a march that went from Bergalusa, Louisiana, to Baton Rouge, the state capital. We started with about 35 people. When we got to Baton Rouge, we had thousands of students and thousands of people from all over the nation and from the great universities. So do not be discouraged by our numbers. Just hold your head up and know that what you're doing is right. And remember, Jesus had only 12 and two of them was disappointing. No. So, you know, let's go to Crawford, and let's go to Crawford and let George W. Bush know to study war no more. And there's nobody who respects and admire your commitment as I do. God bless you all.
Thank you, Peter. You've been an inspiration to all of us. Our next speaker is Mr. Jim Goodnow. He's a Veterans for Peace. He's driving the bus. Bring them home now. Jim is from Terlingua, Texas, right on the border of Mexico. Jim Goodnow.
Thank you, Hadi. I thank everybody that's present here today. It's so important that you're here. The young, the children, the kids that are in high school, William, the ones that are college age, and those of us that happen to have a little gray in our hair and a couple of wrinkles on our face from past campaigns. We see today that we're faced with a campaign that may supersede all others in the sense of, I do not consider that this administration and this regime would be beyond doing anything to carry on the evil that they've perpetrated. Many of us remember Watergate, remember Richard Nixon, remember things we had to do then, Vietnam. I feel that what we're facing today is but makes that era kind of look like it might have been like a nursery rhyme. These people now are desperate. They're getting trapped. They can see the walls coming in on them. Desperate men, and I'll say desperate women, will resort to anything. It's like a wounded lion. They'll strike out at us. We've heard about what they've done with our Patriot Act, with all our freedoms. Right over there on that bumper, it says, don't mess with Texas. That bus flies Texas tags, and I'm a Texan. I'm saying to Bush, don't mess with the Constitution. Don't mess with the Bill of Rights. Don't mess with our men and women. Don't mess with the lives of the Iraqi children, women, mothers, fathers that don't have weapons in their hands and we lay smart bombs on them. That's blood. That's poor blood. That's bad blood. That's blood that we see on the sign over here. That's what these people are going to sleep with at night. That blood on their souls and their big mansions. I talked with Cindy on the march we just came back from. Jim out there joined me on the march. The veterans and some Katrina survivors, we marched from Mobile, Alabama to New Orleans. And I'll tell you what, I can't remember when we got back, about a week ago, but it's sort of a fuzz. When we were down there, the devastation down there, folks, is worse than you can ever imagine if you hadn't seen it in person. I recall back when Katrina hit, I had to go see a doctor over in Odessa, Texas. And I happened to get there on a Friday, and that Friday was the Friday after Katrina slammed through the Gulf Coast on Monday. Now, Odessa, Texas and Midland are like twin cities. George Bush went to middle school over there and had some misadventures in some oil type enterprises that didn't go too far. In the newspaper there, the Odessa Midland American, the headlines on that Friday read, troops finally arrive. I come out of hurricane country. I had a background in Southeast Florida, and I worked as a yacht captain down there. I know about hurricanes. I was down there when Andrew hit. We had National Guard in prior to the eye coming ashore, there when it hit, and picking people up with helicopters, coming in with Humvees, coming in with watercraft supported by the Coast Guard. Isn't it amazing? Katrina hits, and we've got Homeland Security now. And it took them 5 days to get the troops in there. We all know why that was. The troops were killing people over in Iraq. Okay, I'm not going to take up too much more time, but when you think of high crimes and misdemeanors, which are articles of impeachment, I think somebody was asleep at the switch there. And I think that alone is grounds for impeachment, that we did not have the proper people there. And death is all over down there, folks. You can, the stench is still in the air and the dust. We had to wear surgical masks when we marched through there. And some of us got a little bit sick and everything like that, but it's no sweat, it's no sweat there. So I'm gonna hand this over to Hadi and let's just carry on. The struggle's just beginning, but we can't give it up.
All right, Jim, thank you, Jim. I would like to bring to the microphone now Aya's dad. Aya's dad. Aya's dad. Aya Wolf. And John is, as you all know, the founder of the Proper Peace House. And John will tell us about the events of Easter Sunday coming up. And here's the microphone, if he can take it away from his daughter.
Thank you. Thank you, Aya.
Thank you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Begin in the name of God, His mercy and compassion. If you could just close your eyes and center yourself for a minute, feel your backbone. Just center the divine inside of you. Divine Creator, we stand before you, offering up ourselves. Empty, we're yours. As we begin this journey from Dallas to Crawford, we offer ourselves as your instruments. We're not sure what's going to happen, whose voices we're going to speak to, and what hearts will be opened by this event. When you come into Crawford Thursday night, we'll welcome you at the Peace House. And Friday, we'll be having a walk from the Peace House to the Bush Ranch with the Stations of the Cross along the way. And we'll have a reflective book that everybody can have. It'll be a meditative walk to the ranch. Then we're going to be having a rally on Saturday, and then a sunrise service on Sunday morning. And then we'll be excited to welcome everybody to the third anniversary of the existence of the Peace House. We're not sure what's going to happen down there. We might have 500,000 of our Latino brothers and sisters come down.
Right on!
You know, the truth is, we're there for the truth for everybody. And the issues that affect one of us affects all of us. And we're going to be welcoming people to come, especially on the walk on Friday. Easter is about hope and transformation. And that's what we want to bring there. Because as long as people believe that there's nothing that they can do will matter, then nothing they do will matter. The most radical thing we can do in this country is to offer hope. And your courage of being here means a lot. The idea that you can be full of hope about change will inspire others to come forward. You know, it's amazing that this is the season core of what's happening. And to offer that hope and that excitement about what's going on, it's just I'm just amazed. The press conference I saw, we made it into 26 different newspapers yesterday around the country. You know, as the word goes out, you know, it may look like that there's just a stage here with the background, but look at what we're doing to the power that's here. Look at the voice that's coming out of this group.
Traitors!
And some people's worlds will crumble when they realize the truth. So that's what we're here to do, is to offer the truth. It's amazing that when we started the Peace House, that the statistics were opposite. There were maybe 30% of the country were with us, and now 70% of the country is with us in our principles. It's just such a blessing that we were there, being able to speak the truth early on, and that we're still here. And as the truth changes its face and the need to be spoken, we'll be there. So welcome to come down to Crawford for Easter. We'll feed you. We'll take care of you.
All right. So we're going to wrap this up. Last speaker, and then we'll listen to some more wonderful music that my brothers play. Our last speaker is going to be the coordinator of this march. Her name's Valerie Reed. Most of you all know her. Ah, yeah, she's right there. Will you come up, Valerie, and talk about what's going to happen tomorrow?
Okay. Tomorrow we're going to meet up in Lancaster and march to Red Oak. The meetup point for tomorrow, for those of you who are joining us, is going to be at Lancaster Community Park. and that is located on the corner of Dallas Avenue and Wintergreen Avenue. And I believe Lancaster Avenue runs into Dallas Avenue, which runs into 342. And from there, we're going to take Highway 77 on down to Red Oak. And then on Tuesday, we'll make it down to Waxahachie. And that is April the 4th, which happens... Are you writing? Oh, yay! Stephanie's from Waxahachie, and she's going to come with us. And her cousin is the chief of police, right, Stephanie? Your cousin is the chief of police, right? She's got friends in high places. So, and by the way, Stephanie, thanks for providing the food today for Food Not Bombs. We appreciate your warm-hearted hospitality for us hungry marchers. And as I was saying, on Tuesday night, which is April 4th, that's the day that Martin Luther King was assassinated, we all know, and there's going to be a memorial service at the Straightway Church there on Martin Luther King Boulevard at 7 p.m., and I encourage all to come and join us for that. That should be a really good event. Thank you for being here. And we appreciate your words and your music. And thank you for Drums Not Guns for being here. Y'all rock.
Thank you.